Now we're glad to see all that have come tonight. We welcome you very heartily in the Lord's name and trust you'll remember the remaining meetings in the will of God, as you know, right up until Thursday at 7:45. Do remember the meetings throughout the day and join with us in prayer that God will bless His Word to the people of God at this time. Now let us turn, please, to the book of Joshua, and we're going to read in chapter 5. And it came to pass, when all the kings of the Amorites, which were on the side of Jordan westward, and all the kings of the Canaanites, which were by the sea, heard. I'm just going to pause with that word a little minute. That's an important word in these chapters. We have read it already in chapter 2, if you recall. For, you remember, Rahab said, "For we have heard." And then, "as soon as we had heard." Now, just for your interest, move on, please, in the book with me. And you'll get it, of course, in another way. But I do want you to get this train of thought. Chapter 9, for example. Notice in the passage, the part of which we have read, when all the kings heard. Chapter 9, "And it came to pass when all the kings, which were on this side Jordan, in the hills and in the valleys, and in all the coasts of the great sea," and so on, at the end of verse 1, "heard." Then, verse 3, "And when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard." Then look at chapter 10. "Now it came to pass when Adonizedek, king of Jerusalem, had heard." Now, I think you'll notice and you'll recognize that as far as that word is concerned, it is very, very interesting. Chapter 11, "And it came to pass when Jabin, king of Hazor, had heard." Now that's a good theme right throughout this book, beloved. And I won't have time to develop it. And you'll pardon me just introducing it, because there's a great collection of passages that let you see the impact of what God is doing with and through His people. And we saw last night what He had done at the Red Sea and what He had done with the kings of the Amorites. Rahab says, "When we heard." Now, what He's doing now and what He will do later is creating tremendous interest and, of course, fear in the hearts, primarily from this chapter on, in the heart of kings. Now, I trust that will be an opening to you if you haven't noticed it in your studies in Joshua. Now, pardon that, so we'll start again at verse 1. "And it came to pass when all the kings of the Amorites, which were on the side of Jordan westward, and all the kings of the Canaanites, which were by the sea, heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of Jordan from before the children of Israel until we were passed over, that their heart melted, neither was their spirit in them any more because of the children of Israel." The impact that they were having on the nations around is obviously very important. And at that time, the Lord said unto Joshua, "Make these sharp knives and circumcise again the children of Israel the second time." And Joshua made him sharp knives, or knives of flint, and circumcised the children of Israel at the hill of the foreskins. And this is the cause why Joshua did circumcise all the people that came out of Egypt that were males, even all the men of war died in the wilderness by the way, after they came out of Egypt. Now all the people that came out were circumcised, but all the people that were born in the wilderness by the way as they came forth out of Egypt, them they had not circumcised. For the children of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness till all the people that were men of war which came out of Egypt were consumed because they obeyed not the voice of the Lord unto whom the Lord sware that he would not show them the land which the Lord sware unto their fathers that he would give us, a land that floweth with milk and honey. Now verse 10, and the children of Israel encamped in Gilgal, and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at even in the plains of Jericho. And they did eat of the old corn of the land on the morrow after the Passover, unleavened cakes and parched corn in the selfsame day. And the manna ceased on the morrow after they had eaten of the old corn of the land, neither had the children of Israel manna any more, but they did eat of the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. It came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there stood a man over against him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went unto him and said unto him, art thou for us or for our adversaries? And he said, nay, but as captain of the host of the Lord am I now come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and did worship, and said unto him, what saith my Lord unto his servant? And the captain of the Lord's host said unto Joshua, loose or put off thy shoe from off thy foot, for the place whereon thou standest is holy. And Joshua did so. Now Jericho was strictly shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. And the Lord said unto Joshua, see, I have given into thine hand Jericho and the king thereof and the mighty men of valor. And ye shall compass the city, all ye men of war, and go round about the city once. Thus shalt thou do 6 days. And 7 priests shall bear before the ark 7 trumpets of ram's horns. And the 7th day ye shall compass the city 7 times. And the priests shall blow with the trumpets. And it shall come to pass that when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when ye hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout. And the wall of the city shall fall down flat, and the people shall ascend up, every man straight before him. Verse 20. So the people shouted when the priests blew with the trumpets, and it came to pass when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down flat. So that the people went up into the city, heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down flat. So that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. They utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, and ox and sheep and ass, with the edge of the sword. Verse 25, and Joshua saved Rahab the harlot alive, and her father's household, and all that she had, and she dwelleth in Israel even unto this day, because she hid the messengers which Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Now, chapter 7. But the children of Israel committed a trespass in the accursed thing. For Achan the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, took of the accursed thing, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against the children of Israel. Verse 19, and Joshua said unto Achan, my son, give, I pray thee, glory to the Lord God of Israel, and make confession unto him, and tell me now what thou hast done. Hide it not from me. Now we trust the Lord will add his blessing to this reading of his word. Now we're making a little progress in the ministry through the book, And there is yet, as Joshua will say later on, much ground to be possessed. In the nights that are past, we have seen in chapter 1, the chapter of the strength. Then last night we looked at chapter 2 as the chapter of the sign. Then in chapter 3, we considered the chapter of the sanctification. And then finally in chapter 4 last night, we entitled that chapter, the chapter of the stones. Namely, the two sets of 12 that were associated with the crossing of the Jordan. Now, as you know, there is much more than we had time to consider in these chapters, and we're just trying to have a little move throughout, picking a little on the way. Now, we come to chapter 5. And chapter 5, in my judgment, is a tremendously instructive chapter. I think for all of us, whether young or old, and I trust the Lord will help us tonight just to get the message as it is burdening my heart over to all present. I want you to think of chapter 5 as the chapter, mainly, of course, of the supply. Now, while there are many other interesting items of ministry in the chapter and teaching too, I'm just going to single out and entitle it the chapter of the supply. Now let us just see how the chapter runs. It commences with the first verse, which is a considerably long verse. And we have looked at it in a little already. And I'm going to entitle the first verse as the consternation of the kings. Or if you will, the consternation of the potentates. What God has done at Jordan has created a tremendous conviction in the heart of these kings. And thus they know that God is moving triumphantly and miraculously with his people, fulfilling the promises that he made to them. Here they are, on the very threshold of the land now, having arrived under his leading, and having experienced his mighty power in what happened in chapter 4 recorded for us as we read last night. Anticipated and promised in chapter 3. Accomplished and all across safely in chapter 4. Now, I'm quite sure, beloved, that we would want to think that all the accomplishments of God in us and through us as an assembly are having an impact upon the people around us. And we have to ask ourselves the question, beloved, is this so? Is this so? Let me just draw a very quick parallel with what we have in 1 Thessalonians. For from you sounded out the word of the Lord in all Macedonia and Achaia. Think of the extent of that country and that area. Think of that assembly in Thessalonica. And think of the impact that it is making upon not only the immediate locality, but far beyond it. That brings praise and gratitude from the heart of the apostle. And he adds, there was even no need for us, as it were, to announce the gospel, because the word of the Lord has sounded out like a trumpet in all these areas mentioned by him. Now, I would just draw a parallel with that, and I would sincerely trust, beloved, that in this assembly and in each assembly represented, there is something of that in the assembly's impact upon the locality. This is something we would be concerned about, isn't it? To think that these kings, foreign to the things of God, strangers to the God of Israel, But when they heard the marvelous dealings and doings of God, it had a tremendous impact upon them. Now, let that get into our hearts at the very threshold of our meeting and at the very opening of the chapter. Naturally and anxiously, I would ask, and I would expect you would ask, are there conditions necessary for this? Well, I think it's primarily interesting, and I think it's of prime importance that we see the next paragraph, verses 2 to 9. God is now going to deal with his people. And he's going to show us that if subsequent history is going to be anything like what he has done in the foregoing chapters, there must be conformity to his mind and will. Now, that's how I see the relationship of verse 1. Practically, morally, to the material of verse 2 to verse number 9. We have the consternation of the kings, or the potentates, followed by the circumcision of the people. Now that's very simple, isn't it? And yet it is very, very solemn. To me, it is very, very, disturbing to think that I'm just going to put myself in the feet or in the shoes of Joshua. He was a commander. He was a leader. He was the man that was directing and will direct every onslaught made upon the enemy as he enters and now seeks to possess the land in conflict. You know that. Well, if you just put yourself, as I will myself, in Joshua's shoes, how would you feel if every man that's about to defend and is about to attack is put in hospital and you're left without a fighting soldier? Within earshot of the enemy. Do you not feel that this indicates the tremendous confidence and the faith that Joshua must have been called upon to exercise? That was only a step to Jericho. The first onslaught in the land. Every man that stood ready to fight is lying on his back in pain. Very opposite to what you'd expect, isn't it? Not generally a situation a general would expect. But that's what God demanded. God demanded that. And God told them, he said, I want you to take knives of flint. Now, there weren't steel knives. No. There were knives of flint. And you know that flint is stone. Right? What is God teaching? God is teaching, I have asked you to put 12 stones on this side of Jordan now as a testimony to what I have accomplished for you. And we likened it, the 12 that went in, never to be seen again, and the 12 that went out, that had never been seen before, we likened it, did we not, last night, to baptism. Now you know, beloved, our greatest problem, pardon me in bracing you with the R, O-U-R, we have treated baptism as an act, once and for all. And I feel it has reduced our power for God tragically. What is God saying? God is saying, good, listen, the exercise that brought you through Jericho has now to be applied to you personally and constantly. I want to learn that. I want to learn that. It's not something that happened to me, as I told you the other evening, on the 19th of January 1939. It's a long time ago. But friend, it is something that should be operative and effective in my life right now. And I feel that is why God says, take knives of flint. Stone knives. Stone knives. And I want you, says God, to implement something that has been ignored for 40 years. For 40 years. That's a very solemn thing, isn't it, brother? I think it's tremendous to think that it was all down through those years that, as God said, they that were born in the wilderness were not circumcised. Now, where'd they get that from? They got that from Egypt. That is one thing they brought out of Egypt. Now, let's go back to when they started their journey in the wilderness. A knife appeared at the very threshold before that journey began. And you remember the incident. And Moses, if you're going to be a lawgiver, I want to teach you, Moses, you have to be a lawkeeper. And your son's not circumcised. And you know the incident. And we haven't time to deal with it. But at the very threshold of the journey out, the knife was applied. Now here's the threshold of the journey in. And the knife is being applied again. Now, I hope we're all very clear that while we're speaking of the truth of baptism, we are not inferring for one moment, point of doctrine, that baptism is the counterpart of circumcision. For it's not. Circumcision, as far as you and as far as I am concerned, is experience through our identification with the death of Christ. And you know that we were circumcised by the circumcision of Christ, says the apostle in Colossians. And you know that very well, don't you? And that is, of course, not the 8th day when the Lord Jesus was circumcised according to the law, but no, Paul is relating that to his death at Calvary. And that's the fulfillment of this in our lives. So we're just using the picture here. The need for the constant, the need for the intense application of the death of Christ in our lives, dealing with the same painful intrusion upon the flesh as did this knife upon the flesh of each one of those soldiers. There they are on their back. Every one of them on their back. Oh, beloved, how necessary to see that as something I should know day by day. Something I should know experimentally. And of course, as you know, when the Lord deals with this in other portions, he then takes it out figuratively. And he speaks about circumcising the foreskin of your heart. There it brings it into a moral application, even to Israel. in those days. And you know, beloved, here is something we would need to learn. I'm sure that we are learning it, and I'm sure that most of us have learned it. But think of the prostration of this whole company of men. And think, beloved, of the demand it must have made upon Joshua. Every fighting man on his back. And the enemy within reach. And you see, beloved, the more painful the application, the more widespread the application, then the more dependent we will be on God. Whatever that may involve. I see that in Joshua. I see that in his unreserved acceptance of the word of God and the command of God. He may have remonstrated and said, well, Lord, I tell you what we'll do. We'll do 50 at a time. We couldn't possibly do them all. But here was a complete, unreserved application of the knife upon every fighting man upon whom he was depending in a natural way for the defense of the people of God on the very threshold of the land. Now I'm sure we can learn the practical implications of that. And so, having experienced that, we have entered in surely a long time to the meaning of Gilgal and the message of Gilgal and the moment of Gilgal, which of course is this. Their approach of Egypt has been rolled away. That is something they had gathered from an Egyptian world. The non-application of the knife in circumcision was at that moment of time, by the application of the knife, rolled away as far as that generation was concerned. And Egypt and its inhibition toward the truth of God had been judged by the people of God. Brethren, what does that not open to us tonight? Is there a thing with which we're associated, but is not affected by this? Well, to someone, it's too painful. I know it is, beloved. And you know that it is. You have already said it in your heart as I would say it. But then think of the pain of these men. Think of the situation created by the totality of the application and the dangers to which they were exposed. But Joshua leaves that with God in total dependence upon him. He knew God would preserve. What a most painful thing it is, beloved, to deal with something we have gathered from an Egyptian world that we would cling to, aye, for 40 years. And listen, if we're going to have this impact of verse 1 upon the nations, and I'm not saying you're not having the impact. I have to be very careful. I hope you'll enter into the spirit and the sympathy of my exercise for you, for I haven't come just to have a week's meetings. I have come with a burden to brethren I love and to a testimony that I appreciate. But now listen, if we're going to have an impact, if there's going to be a consternation among the kings, and that's going to be maintained by our progress in divine things, then there has to be a very resolute dealing with the reproach of Egypt. That's not easy, is it? In our appearance, in our attitude, in the things we imbibe, in our appetite, in every detail of our being, beloved. And I leave you, because of the speed of that clock, I leave you to formulate to the extent to which you need that. And you'll allow me to do that to the extent that I need it. For the good of the testimony. And for the glory of God. and for the experiencing of the power of God amongst us corporately. Now surely we understand that. I don't want to be using language you don't comprehend. I don't want to be saying something that you're going to have to go to the dictionary when you get home. I want you just to have your Bible before you and get it in your heart. That's what's before me. Now, before we get to the supply, go to the last paragraph. Go to the last paragraph. Verse 13 to verse number 15. Here's a leader, Joshua. You think, beloved, now listen carefully. Now you brethren, you listen carefully. You think that I'm going to get away with it? Standing here tonight, telling you to imply and to apply circumcision. Now I'm looking at you and you're looking at me. And there's not a soul sleeping. And we're doing business for God with people we love. Do you think as you sit there that I'm going to get scot-free? It was all right for Joshua to sharpen the knife. And it was all right for Joshua to take the knives that God commanded. Go through the host if he did it or whoever did it. Put every man on his back. Now, Lord, I've done it. Is that it? No, it's not it. Joshua, I'm going to put you on your face. All right, putting the soldiers on their back. All right, putting the corporals on their back. But I'm going to put the general on his face. Those men simply faced a sharp knife of flint. Well, this man faces a sword. Friend, I find that the big thing. I can tell the people of God what to do and what to go and where to go. But according to myself, am I led by the same Spirit? I'm good at telling you what to do. I'm good at telling you as I've done. I hope you've got it. But listen, here's this man. After he had applied that, he's faced with a sword. And I want to plead with my brethren that are public in their ministry and in their service for God and take the lead amongst the people of God. It is important that you apply and do exactly what God tells you to do. But to remember, it's the easiest thing to tell the people of God to do that and you do something else. That's the problem. Came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho, never was as near. But he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there stood a man over against him with a sword drawn in his hand. Right at him. The pain of the knife. That's the paragraph we have just touched. But the providence of the sword. What did Joshua do? He fell on his face. Who's the leader here? I am. Are you? Where's the leader now? On his face. When he recognizes the person who holds the sword, when he realizes the closeness, the proximity of the sword to him, on his face. Not the first time he was on his face. But here's the most important time. Who is the leader now? Joshua acknowledges that God is a leader. What does God tell him? What does the angel tell him? The angel tells him, put off thy shoes. No. This isn't Moses. This isn't the bush. Put off thy shoe. Why the shoe? Well, he's about to possess an inheritance. And he's the leader. And it just might be, now I wouldn't want to say this, or to infer too much, but it just might be that Joshua might feel this is his inheritance. And you know, there are some brethren have got the idea that the assembly's theirs. And it belongs to God. So God says to Joshua, in the language of these words, put off thy shoe from off thy foot. Why? I think the answer's in Ruth chapter 4. It's not your foot's going to mark the claim to this inheritance. It's mine. What lessons for a leader to learn? What lessons? Because you know that that's what that man did in Ruth 4. He yielded his right to the inheritance when he took his shoe off. And God is teaching Joshua, Joshua, you're the leader. And you're the leader into the land. But remember, the land is not yours. The land is mine. Wonderful lessons for Joshua. And brethren, let me repeat the contrast in the two paragraphs that are amazingly powerful, I trust, in your life as